Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Katie Britton. Andrew Smith has captivated readers with his YA novels In the Path of Falling Objects, The Marbury Lens, and Passenger. And his newest book is no different. Grasshopper Jungle doesn't hold back any punches. Its brutally honest narrator clinically recounts the beginning of the end of the world as he and his friends try to figure out their own feelings for each other, which part of their family's past can be connected to the present, and what caused their little Iowan town to turn so horrifying.
Well, actually, my whole wife's side of my family, all of my in-laws come from Iowa. So it was kind of, you know, a shout out to them and the values of Iowa living. And the ones who've read it are very appreciative that I've captured this sense of the place.
You do capture it well. And I'd have to say the book, while it is an end of the world story, it is so much about the history of the characters. And the reader really appreciates it, getting the background on characters, whether they're peripheral or not, as well as the history of our narrator, Austin. So why was it important for you to add this historical component?
Well, first of all, I'm also fascinated by history. And I'm also, as a student of history, I also ask that same question that Austin does over and over. He asks, if the lesson of history is that we're supposed to learn from our past in order to avoid making mistakes in the here and now, why do we keep making those mistakes? And I wanted to create this book and this story that deals with all of these connections between seemingly unrelated things, whether it's past events in the history of Austin's family, urinal factories in Minnesota, as many things as I could show that there are relationships between. Thought it was kind of my overriding message and my goal for doing the book.
It was so interesting seeing how all roads lead to Austin.
Well, I think all roads lead to all of us, really. And Austin makes that statement, too. Some of us are moving in the wrong direction and we bump into each other. But I think we're all really ultimately on that same road, all the way back to those first guys who painted on walls of caves in Altamira and Lascaux.
We have the history of things, but the history of Austin as well and his name. And I feel that it generally gets lost in translation of how we have come to have the names that we have. And he's Zerba, but it wasn't originally like that.
That's right. I'm actually the firstborn son of an immigrant, and my mother was not American. And I know, you know, the experience that she went through of the anglicization of her name. And I had just made this name up as I started to write the book. I made up this last name, and then I started to do research on the name, which isn't a very common last name, and that found out that if you did have the name with that kind of a spelling, that you were probably of Polish descent, and the original spelling should have been, you know, the alternate spelling that I throw in from time to time when I'm talking about Austin's ancestors. And so, you know, just making that name up kind of connected me to a lot of historical research that kind of became super important in making the story.
And as you were making the story, one thing that really got me was that I'm used to end of the world books starting with either the world that has already been destroyed, but not really going through the methodology of how it became that way. And a good chunk of the book, more than half of it, is setting up that scene. And I was wondering as I was reading it, I'm thinking this is a really interesting way of writing an end of the world book where we don't really have the end of the world happening yet.
Right. And you know what's been funny to me now that my experience, and I've gotten hundreds and hundreds of messages from readers, and the vast majority of them are adults, by the way, about the book and how it's surprising to me because Austin says throughout the book, there's no surprise, this book is going to be about the end of the world. And yet I think that I've gotten a number of messages from people where they were kind of hoping that Austin and Robbie and Chan would save the day and make the world not come to an end. But Austin is so clinical in his approach towards history, and he's so straightforward and honest. He keeps claiming that about himself. So there really shouldn't be any surprise. There's no big bang at the end, but I think the ending really comes around to a nice point on the road Austin and Robbie are on.
It does. And throughout all of this happening and leading up to the end of the world, there's this, it's not even an underlying thing. It is right there. And it's how Austin is dealing with coming of age and his raging hormones. He's not sure he's in love with his best friend, but he's in love with his girlfriend. And he doesn't know if that best friend's love is strictly platonic or not. And so he's struggling with these feelings while he's still also trying to clinically analyze those feelings and what's happening around him.
That's a good point. And I also think that when you get to that point of maturation where you are comfortable with who you are, or at the same time you've decided that not making a decision is the right course for you, that change, that transition from adolescence into the real beginnings of adulthood is kind of like the end of the world. And that was really Austin and Robbie's and Shan's personal end of the world that they dealt with, besides what was going on up on the streets and in the fields around Ealing, Iowa.
And Robbie, he is sure of himself. He knows he came out to Austin and Shan saying that I am gay, and that was in seventh grade. And I also like how Austin says everything happened in seventh grade. It seems to always happen to people when they're in seventh grade, just the major things happening in their lives.
Yeah, that's got to be like the worst, most tumultuous year in any kid's life is seventh grade. And yeah, and so, and not only did everything happen to Austin and Robbie in seventh grade, but everything kind of happened to every single person that they knew when they were in seventh grade too.
As the story progresses, we learn that Shan's stepfather, Johnny, is the much younger brother of the man who had originally made Earling, Iowa, because of his McKeon Industries.
And that's right.
There are so many secrets within there then.
Oh, yeah. Austin says, too, that, you know, good books are about everything. And so as you go deeper and deeper into this book, there are so many layers that are peeled away that reveal the history of all these kids and their families, and how they're connected to dog trainers during the Great Depression and barefoot water skiing champions and this crazy man that would just do anything recklessly in the name of science and profit, without really a concern for the bigger connections that kind of ripple through history.
And at first they think that the McKeon Industries, I mean, they employed the majority of Earling before they shut down, and it was pulsomatic toothbrushes and these wonderful shower heads. So then once these secrets start coming out that there was actually a lot more science going on behind the scenes, Austin, as you said, doesn't lie. He always tells the truth. But at the same time, it's one of those things that they don't really want to talk about what they have seen.
Right, because again, this is, I think, that what something that a lot of kids go through is that when they realize, you know, the real depth of darkness that they're surrounded by in the real world, whether it's, the effects of what Grady McKeon's corporation had in the immediate vicinity, the recession, the war that was going on in Afghanistan that Austin's brother was wounded in, and all of these things. Sometimes that's also, you know, having to face that and confront that and deal with it as an adult. That's another element in your world as a child coming to an end. So when I wrote the book, it was kind of in reaction to this piece that criticized me about writing about dark themes in young adult literature. And I was thinking that when you write dark themes in young adult literature and it's kind of fantastical and, you know, otherworldly, you know, you have to keep in mind that kids that are going through adolescence here in America today have to contend with a lot of dark realities that are present, that are pervasive in their environment, and they're terrible things that they have to deal with. And so I tried to keep things kind of as real as possible, but also throwing in the ridiculous here and there, just for laughs.
Going along with that, it's having somebody to talk to that you can open up to. And Austin was looking for somebody to talk about his feelings for Robbie and his feelings for Shan, and not wanting to talk to either of them about the other people. He wanted somebody to talk it through with. And I think that's what everybody wants and needs, is somebody that they can look to for advice.
And he And he tries to talk to his father about it. And there's this really awkward scene where he's about to ask his father, and his father knows what Austin's talking about. And he, as Austin becomes kind of nervous and he fumbles with his question, his father kind of takes that fumble and runs with it and changes the subject to what's going on in chemistry class. So if there's nothing else, because I'm a father of two teens myself, and if there's nothing else, I hope that there are going to be some parents that read that particular chapter and realize that sometimes you only get one opportunity to talk to your kid about things that are so monumentally important to them. And you're much better off not being afraid of having that conversation as opposed to being afraid of not taking the opportunity to have that conversation.
Absolutely. And I think it obviously helps Austin to find out, and I'm assuming it's later on that he finds out all of this history about his family, but he's not the first person in his family to have had feelings for the same sex.
Right, right. His great-grandfather, whose first name, Anjay, is also Austin's middle name. And he has his story that goes on during the Great Depression with this talking bird, this European starling that he finds and rescues. And I purposely wanted to make sure that people appreciate the fact that, yeah, that there are all kinds of people that are part of your family and part of your environment and part of your community, and it's important to recognize them.
And as you said, you do have to kind of spatter in some of the ridiculous, and that is our unstoppable soldiers.
Oh, yeah.
Which are the ones that can potentially take over the world. And they're giant praying mantis-type creatures.
That have insatiable desires for mating and for eating, which are the two things that most bugs probably only want to do.
Austin is so candid in his narration. I mean, he holds nothing back, which is wonderful, and that I believe is part of his truth. But he holds nothing back when he is describing what is going on, describing his feelings, and describing the history as he feels that he is the recorder of the history now since he is still alive. But just the candidness of all of the words on the pages. And I mean, that's a real tribute to you writing a novel like this.
Well, thank you. I mean, I have frequently been asked, especially by teenage boys, that, you know, when you write about this stuff, don't you feel kind of vulnerable or embarrassed? And I'm really not afraid of words at all. And so in becoming Austin, who's the narrator, I realized how this kid was, and he was going to be candid about everything, because really, I think that, as Austin recognizes, that's really the job of the historian, is that you have to be clinically, truthfully, straightforward with everything that's going on and not abbreviate out even what might seem to be the most insignificant connection.
Well, the name of the book is Grasshopper Jungle. Andrew, thank you so much for speaking with us today.
It was my pleasure. Thank you very much, Katie.
Again, the name of Andrew Smith's book is Grasshopper Jungle. It is published by Dutton. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.